Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Hair certainly is very good business, and the women here in Johannesburg spend a lot of time, money, and thought on it.
Hair is very important to one's identity because it's who you are. So you have to take pride in your hair, embrace whatever you've been given. That's a woman's glory.
And what style are you wearing today?
This is a straight back. It's braids, okay? They took braids and then they plaited them in onto my natural hair. People usually say it's a gangster look, but it's not a gangster look.
And why do you wear this particular style?
No, I just tried something different.
Why don't you use real hair extensions?
Real extensions? Oh, heck no, that's expensive.
At the moment, I'm trying to cultivate an afro, see how that goes. So I'm just braiding it to keep it growing. I had relaxed hair before, and I was like, hey, let's give this afro thing a go. Maintenance is the issue. It's so much work.
Tell me about the work.
There's a routine to it. So before you sleep, you have to tie it into little ponies. You have to wake up, straighten it out, and just comb your life away.
When you have your afro out, do you feel different? Does it change your identity and how people see you?
It does change how people see you because people comment on it. It's like, oh, wow, well done. You look so nice. You should look like this all the time. Like you're telling me, now I'm African again. They define Africanness with afro. So now when you decide to relax your hair, it's not because you want to feel less, you become less African. You decide it because it's more convenient or it's the type of hair you like.
What are you wearing? What's your style at the moment?
Okay, so I'm wearing a Brazilian weave, which I actually got about 2 years ago. I love it. Because, you know, with this, I can just straighten it out with my nails and I'm good to go.
It's real hair. It's virgin hair.
It's a real person's hair, I think.
And how does that make you feel, wearing someone else's hair?
It does. It is a little bit weird, though, you know, like wearing someone else's hair. But it's fun at the same time. It makes me feel pretty.
But like many other places in the world, there is also a growing movement to encourage women to go natural. And in one of Johannesburg's hippest new creative and cultural spaces, a former potato shed, I meet up with Taryn Gill of Perfect Hair.
Hi, Taryn.
Hello, Justine. Lovely to meet you, Justine, and welcome to the potato shed.
Tell me about your shop, Taryn. What have you got here?
You sell hair products.
So it's the kind of formulas that are all natural, all African, crafted to meet the needs of African hair in African climates.
Would you like to wear a weave?
Absolutely bloody not. It's never going to happen. Just the whole concept of taking a fake piece of hair or even a real piece of hair and gluing it to my forehead or stitching it into my hair, putting this, what would effectively feel like a small rug, onto your head and leaving it there for months on end for dirt and odor to accumulate, it just sounds traumatic. I can't imagine taking somebody else's hair and putting it on mine and then thinking that that was beautiful. To me, it's such an indictment of a psychology where girls have been raised and taught to believe that your hair's bad hair. You've got to cover it up. You've got to straighten it. You've got to cut it off. You've got to break it.
When we were in India, one of the biggest exporters of hair said the future for us is in Africa because of the growing middle class. So there is still a very large group of people who want to wear weaves on their heads?
There's no doubt that you can walk into any salon in Johannesburg, in Lusaka, in Lagos, especially in Lagos. You can walk into any African salon and ask that salon owner where the bulk of her revenue comes from, and she will tell you that it's weaves and relaxers. That pie is still 70 to 80% dominated by false hair, natural wigs. But what you can see is that the consumers who are on the tipping point, who are ahead of the curve, those are the opinion leaders, those are the influencers, those are the girls who walk through a mall proudly sashaying around with her afro, and 20 women will walk past and go, if she can do it, I can do it too. I think weave owners have got another decade of rule in terms of where this woman spends her money, but they will find that the African consumer is so sussed around what's healthy for her and what her self-worth means. And I think that business people from abroad underestimate the intellectual capacity of the African female consumer and just how aware she is. We can already see, as South Africans, I think it's a 16.5% drop in relaxer sales in the last 2 years alone. That's millions of rands lost. And where's that money gone to? It's gone to small entrepreneurs like me, or women buying olive oil and coconut oil and blending their own formulas in their kitchens. It's gone to people saying, I will not burn holes in my daughter's scalp just so I can send her to school with a straight ponytail. The fact that people are transitioning to natural, and it is such an emotional journey. You will never meet anyone who doesn't want to stand, talk, laugh, share tips, come to what we call hair conversations, which is this constant, feverishly passionate dialogue that's always happening. And it's just, it's kind of goosebump stuff. You know, it really is goosebump stuff. Girls get emotional about their hair.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive.
Unmuted.
Almost messed myself up. I do not do mornings that well, but I got my coffee. I'm doing better today. Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Sunday, April 17th, 2016, so I have been told. This is our global Sunday talk on racism. We do this once a month. We try to encourage listeners from outside the United States to participate, to make sure that we constantly keep in mind that white supremacy, this is not some isolated issue that, you know, happens to be a little bit of a problem every now and then in one specific region, that it does not matter where you are on this planet. Racism, white supremacy is going to be a problem for you. It is the dominant force on this planet in the form of people, what we should be focused on to try to solve immediately. Certainly, we have our folks who are going to participate from where they are outside the states first, and then anybody else, if you're listening in and you have questions or thoughts on what's being discussed, certainly feel free to chime in. The number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Today, we this program is only half of our normal broadcast time. Is it's about 90 minutes. So this is not a program to lollygag. If you think you have a question or a comment or you want to participate in the conversation, you should go ahead, dial in, get your hand up, because this is not a program where we just hang around and you can wait until the very last minute to get your conversation or comment in. The audio clip that you heard at the beginning, that was from the BBC. They had two segments this week that dealt with racism, white supremacy. The one I played yesterday was about black people in Mexico, which I thought was fascinating. They even had the moment where some of the enforcement officers approached a pair of black females and told them that Mexico doesn't have black people, and they deported them. The other piece that they played that we started the program with today was about hair. They did not, in the whole piece, I only played about 5 minutes of it, but that piece is about a half hour. I don't think they mentioned the term racism one time in the whole piece, even though racism is what is driving all of that. They start in India and talk about females cutting off their hair there, and they were saying the dominant place it goes is the continent, Africa, or the United States, because they have so many black people there. They talked about, you heard the clip at the end, which I thought was great. They were talking about the direction things are going, that they think that they're already seeing. It's not that they think. They already see a drastic trend in reduction of straightening and using different weaves and different buying hair to cover and mutilate your natural creator-given African hair. And that's fantastic if that's happening, and saying that they think it's only going to be about another decade and then people won't really be doing that as much, which is awesome. But that, I don't think they mentioned racism one time in that segment. With that, some of the folks that are already with us, let's see, I think we should have, one other person I'm adding as well in the midst of all this. We should have Mary, Andrew, we have one, I want to see how she wants us to call her. I think we have one other female caller with us. I think they're all in the UK. Andrew, Mary, our other black female caller, are you all with us?
Yep. Good afternoon, Gus. How you doing? You okay?
Right poorly as usual, but it's great to hear from you again, sir.
Yes.
Let's see. Mary, are you with us?
I'm here.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Our other black female caller, how do you want us to reference you for the program?
You can call me Lorraine.
Lorraine.
You can you hear me?
Yes,
yeah,
ma'am.
Lorraine.
Outstanding. Glad to hear from you. Glad we could get you on the program. We've been trying to get Lorraine with us a few times before, but schedule conflicts just didn't make it happen. But glad we got her with us today. And I'm adding Mr. Fox should be with us presently as well. Let's see if he's on. While I'm at... Oh, Mr. Fox, are you with us, sir?
Greetings. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Loud and clear.
Okay, that's great.
Awesome. And we have our caller joining us from Canada as well. Are you with us, sir?
Yes, I'm here.
Outstanding. Grand. We have any other folks? If you're outside the state, certainly get your hand up immediately so we can get you in the conversation. And if even if you are stateside, feel free to get your hand up if you have a question or would like to participate. Before we move forward to any issues we want to discuss, anybody have any thoughts? The folks that were able to hear the audio clip at the beginning on the hair segment, anybody have any comments they wanted to get in?
Yeah.
Yes, can I add a comment, Gus?
Yes, sir. I just, before you comment, if folks could be mindful of the background noise, that would be helpful. We do have a lot of people on the line, so if you know you're in a loud environment, particularly if you're using like your the microphone on your device, your computer, or whatever you happen to be on, if it's picking up like whatever background noise is happening, if you could maybe use your mute button, that would be great, just to keep down some of the distortion and extra noise in the program. That would be great. Thank you kindly. Andrew, you were going to comment, sir? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that probably as it is in all places where African people live, black people live, I've become cognizant that black women's hair is a big thing over the last sort of 15, 16 years. It's great if it's if processed hair is on the in London anyway, probably all over the UK, you know, there's been massive sort of discussions backwards and forwards about it. And there's big movements in the UK, thank God, amongst African women, amongst black women, to reduce or at least to create dialogue with black women that choose to, I don't know, actually it's not choice really, is it? Black women who do that to their heads. I just want to add one thing. I was listening to an African radio station, and one presenter said something quite interesting. He said that there's loads and loads of little black girls who never, come the age of about five, have never touched their mother's real hair, right? And that stood out to me. He said that about 7 months ago, 8 months ago, and that's the bit that stands out for me. If that's on the reduction, then that is absolutely brilliantly great. But I just want to add one other little thing. It would be lovely if the reduction in processed hair correlates with a rising of consciousness as regards racism, white supremacy. And it's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily follow that, the, you know, that a change of hairstyle follows some sort of consciousness around racism, white supremacy, or any kind of consciousness, you know, because for some people it's just a hairstyle, a change of hairstyle. So I just want to just add that.
Fascinating. I will only add, if anybody else wants to comment on that, feel free. I'll only add just maybe in evidence of what you're saying, that the narrator, the main narrator for the piece that we heard, even though they had a lot of different people speaking, even a lot of non-white people speaking, was a white woman who was in some sort of sexual arrangement with a black male. And she began and ended the piece talking about her own children and how they felt about their hair, and saying that they wished that they had straight hair like their mom and didn't like their hair as much because it's curly, and are trying to work to appreciate, value their own creator-given hair. That was in the segment.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that might be in relation to what you were saying.
Yeah.
But did you have...
Sorry.
Mr. Fox, yes, sir?
Sorry to interrupt. That segment played at the beginning, I didn't hear it. Was it based in the States or was it based somewhere in Europe?
It was from the BBC. It was... a white English female.
Okay.
She was the host, and it was about a 30-minute program that they did on, it was called Trading Hair. And so they went to India, and they talked to Indian females who shaved their hair, and they take this hair and they sell it all over the world and make weaves out of it and wigs and all that stuff. They talk to them, ask them how they felt about it. They talk to some of the people who are in this business who sell the hair to get their thoughts. They refer to Africa as gold because they buy so much of this product. They talk to black females on the continent about this. And towards the end, they said that the trend is a great reduction in all of this, in the chemicals to straighten hair and wigs, weaves, all that stuff, that there's a great reduction. And they think, you know, within 10 years or so that this market is going to be drastically cut down because a lot more of the black females, they are doing natural hair and they're just not doing this anymore. But it was, the narrator was a white woman who had had multiple children with a black male. And she talked about her children also being a part of this process, and just the racism, the white supremacy that devalues our hair, our melanin and everything, and how our own children didn't value their black hair.
Standard procedure. I agree with Andrew. There has to be a consciousness along with the actual, you know, children and young girls wanting to have natural hair, because if not, as Andrew said, it's just going to be another hairstyle, and hairstyles come in and out of fashion, because I believe that happened in the late 60s and then the 70s, and then by the 80s, everyone had the S-curl. So there has to be consciousness with it.
For sure. Any of our female callers have any input they want to add? Or
I just think it's... Sorry, you go. It's okay.
Oh, thank you. Did that woman cover whether or not she values her own children's hair out of interest?
Oh, boy. It's. I should have added that. I didn't want to play the whole thing, but she... let me see how she did it. She said that... She talked with her youngest daughter, who I believe was 12. She talked with her, and she said that, like, she was the one that said that she wanted straight hair, that she didn't like her hair as much sometimes, particularly, like, in the morning when she was trying to get ready to go to school, because it takes a long time, and you have to just keep combing. And the mom, the white woman, suspect wouldn't be there, but the white woman, so she's saying... But you value your hair. You know, it's lovely. It's great. It's nothing wrong with your hair. She's saying all the things that you're supposed to say, right, and allegedly encourage this child to love and appreciate her hair. And then at the end of the clip, she talks to her oldest daughter. And her oldest daughter is like, man, we had so many. She didn't use the word traumatic, but that's what it was. She said she had so many of these traumatic moments when they were younger, where their white mom was combing their hair and it was so painful, and she was yanking on their hair because it would be a tangle or something in it, and she'd be yanking on their head and it was so painful. And, you know, the oldest daughter said, I don't think you realize how much it hurt when we had these sessions. And the mom said, what's your relationship like with your hair now? And she says, I'm trying to appreciate it. I thought that was important, just the honesty, that trying, not that she's there yet, but trying, which I think is the state most of us would be in because of racism. But it was a lot of commentary that if you are more confused about racism and you don't understand what it means to be white, you would think, oh, this is a great white woman and she's having all these important dialogues with her black children about hair and loving the hair and all that stuff. But if you really listen to it, if you grasp racism better, I think you would see the tackiness of it all.
I'm just going to say, from my point of view, I've never had chemically processed hair because my family wouldn't allow it, and it was a struggle in terms of everyone else having permed hair around me. But as an adult, I really do appreciate the fact that my family taught me to appreciate my hair, and I actually really love my hair. And on the flip side of it, I see how much European women actually envy our hair, so it makes me enjoy it even more because they can't have it, or the things that they do to try and have it do not work. And I also think that because no other group has our hair, it's even more unique and special. So that's my point of view.
Black self-respect. Awesome. Black self-respect. Seems like that was a big value in your family. Lorraine, you were going to comment as well, I thought.
Yeah, I was going to say that it is important that we do discuss the things that affect us as a people. But the thing that really sort of stands out is the way how we kind of focus on the fact that women chemically process the hair and women weave the hair, but it's not just women. There's lots of men who are weaving now. That's the new thing, and that's increasing. Here, a lot of young men are relaxing their hair too. So when we're talking about having that pride and making sure that we instill that in our children, we can't forget our males. We have to also include them. I don't know what it's like in America, but over here it is a growing trend.
I haven't seen, excellent point. I haven't seen the weaving in the States from black males, but the relaxing, I think that is long tradition of that that's bragged about. That's in the film Malcolm X, if people have seen it, where he gets the conch. They've had different names for it down through the years. But, I mean, it's not, you won't see tons of black people doing this, but I have seen a good number of black males who have had straightened hair, relaxers, that sort of thing. Throughout history, I'm sure it's still some of that that goes on now as well. So, absolutely.
Is she seeing that with the younger generation?
Yes, in Birmingham, where I live, lots of young men are walking around with their hair relaxed, especially young males from dual heritage background. It's a growing trend up north as well. It is.
I've not seen that yet. That's going to surprise me when I do. What ages are we talking about? What, 15 to what, 25?
We're talking around the age of 19, around those ages. A friend of mine had a conversation with a young man on the bus, and she asked him basically why he was doing that to himself. And, you know, I think the next time she said she saw him, he'd grown it out. So, yeah, there is quite a few people down these sides with it, young people with it, yeah.
What, like, kind of how Snoop Dogg sometimes has it when he tries to play the pimp role, that kind of thing?
No, they shave round the back and sides and relax the top.
Oh, and like sort a of ponytail. Give it
like a quiff. No, just like a quiff, you know? Oh. Just like a spiky quiff.
In London, I've not seen that in London.
Never have I, Andrew.
At all. However, don't get me wrong, fashions do sometimes go north to south, not just south to north. If it were to catch on down in London, it wouldn't surprise me because, and the reason, I suppose the reason why it wouldn't surprise me is because if it's true that young men are looking for identity, and if it's true that not all, but some young black men do not have positive black, as in role model, as in father, not just uncle and big brother, you know, I'm talking about father in the house, it may then, not all the time, but I'm saying it may also follow that when the compass goes out to find role modeling and identity, it might be, you know, the females in the family with the weave, you know, sometimes, you know, that might be it. You know, I mean, I'm not saying these things are automatically going to follow. I'm just saying that I speak for myself. Growing up, my mum did the best with three boys. We never had any positive male role modelling at all growing up. My role models are Muhammad Ali, Pele, and who else? And effectively, you know, and I'm luckily, and as I said before, early Bambaataa, early hip-hop, that was it for me. Whereas, and I think I was quite fortunate, you know, but then every young man is different, and without father in the house as a positive rock, right, then you know, really anything can happen. So it would not surprise me if young men start weaving their hair like women. It just would not surprise. I'm not talking about, I mean, Gus already touched on the fact that men used to conk their hair. Even all over the Caribbean, when they came here, their hair was conked, effectively, you know, pretty much, right? But we're not talking, we're talking about modern day weaving. And that comes from somewhere. You understand? And if there's no gatekeeper to say, you're not doing that, you're doing this. You know, young boys will, sorry to say, as somebody told me on last week, their boys sit down to go toilet, to go wee-wee, and they will weave their hair and do everything else. You know, because, you know, there may or may not be, as I said before, that level of role modelling. And I'm hoping in the future there is role modelling, but that all depends on the strength of African relationships, how strong we can make them.
Sorry, carry on.
So I was just going to say the poison's getting more potent with each generation because it's not seeming to be dying.
I was going to say with the weaves, it's in America where you have men who are going bald and they want to sort of regain their hair. So they'll squirt the glue on the hair and they use like a yaki hair, which looks natural. And they glue it onto the hair and then shave it to make it look like natural hair.
Yeah, Lorraine, so if you go onto YouTube, that as well.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that that's another growing trend. So really, we should be sort of not just concentrating on one gender. We have to be mindful of both genders in that regard.
For sure. Black self-respect, real important, I think, all the way around. It touches so many different aspects of our behavior and how we're responding to racism, white supremacy, extremely important. And white people do such a good job. That's why I said that segment, it is interesting. But the fact that you have a white woman who is sexually sewering a black male and has these two children, two non-white children, and that racism, white supremacy is not mentioned one time in the clip as the motivating factor for why this is happening, why this is such a big booming business. And you could apply this across the board to so many different things. The skin bleaching creams that are used by so many folks, males and females around the world, not just black people. That racism, white supremacy is what is producing all of this dysfunction, all of this misbehavior. Before moving to, I was going to get our caller in Canada kind of give us an update with what's happening with Black Lives Matter in Toronto. They've been actively protesting against the police department there and the police terrorism against black citizens. And they've been pretty much saying that exclusively in a lot of the news clips that I've been hearing, calling it terrorism and how it is focused, targeting specifically black citizens, black Canadians. Was there anything folks had seen, observations or what have you, folks wanted to make sure that they got in? Anything important people wanted to make sure they shared?
The only thing I can say is, well, what happened here in the Canadian media for the past week and a half, but the last few days it's sort of calmed down. There was a tweet by one of the Black Lives Matter TO members that got a lot of attention, a black female, and I actually follow her on Facebook, and I've spoken with her. She's one of the more informed black people in Canada, because I always say blacks in Canada are very, very confused in a unique way. And her tweet basically said, "Allah, please help me before I cuss or kill any of these whites or men." Something to that effect. And I guess because they were getting meetings with our premier, that's basically the person who's in charge of the provinces of Canada, and the mayor of Toronto, the refined white supremacist mayor, John Tory, and refined white supremacist Premier Kathleen Wynne, they actually had, they're actually having a meeting with the Premier, I think, at this time or around that time. So now people started looking for stuff to point out. So they looked at one of the activists' tweet where she said about the cussing and killing, and that just dominated the news. And what I, one thing I did like is that when they spoke to one of the Black Lives Matter Toronto members, one of them kept pointing out the more important thing is the black men being killed by Toronto police. Why are we not talking about that? And there were some other black folks in the media who did mention that we should be focusing on the lack of transparency of the Toronto Police Department and the lack of attention to those and to the Special Investigations Unit. So now there's sort of less focus on the tweet. And right now the current focus is on the suicide of Indigenous inhabitants of Canada right now. That's what's taking in the mainstream media. But when the Black Lives Matter thing was going on, one of the things that bothered me, it was, it ran parallel with, of course, the death of Rob Ford. So that took up a lot of coverage for a while. So it wasn't until that white supremacist found a tweet that, mind you, she made this tweet 2 months ago or 3 months ago in February, and they used that to sort of curtail or distract from the actual subject matter. I hope I was clear when I was explaining it.
I understood what you were saying. I guess I would say, number one, that is another great illustration, because I saw this, the tweet that you're referencing. That's another great illustration. Racists, they can skillfully take things and make it an issue when they want to make it an issue. So this, and I think this has happened repeatedly. I think if people remember in the States, the incident with Ray Rice, where he brutalized his now wife, they weren't married at the time, and they had the video footage. They had that footage for months. And then they waited strategically, I would say, until it was right after the Michael Brown shooting, or right in the context of all that. Eric Garner had been killed. This is 2014. Eric Garner had been killed. Michael Brown had been killed. All these other police killings. In Arizona, it was Michelle Cusso, black female. She was killed. And then they released the video. Not that they just got this. They had this for a while. But they just wait and release it now to, oh, we can divert people's attention away from that. I think they had something similar with the Bill Cosby allegations. These allegations had been out for a long, long time. Same thing. Wait until everybody is really upset about racism and what's happening with all these black people being shot, killed, choked, tased, everything else that was happening. No, we're going to switch focus to Bill Cosby and what a no good, you know, womanizer and abuser and what he has done or is accused of having done. Really, really skilled at that sort of thing, at refocusing our attention. The other thing, it seems like from what I saw, they were trying to get not just white people to attack this victim who made this tweet about her frustration with whites, but trying to get other black people, standard operating procedures. They'll just go get another victim and get them to comment or talk bad about what this victim.
Gus, I'm going to have to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. Just something I want to add to that, what you said. That actually did happen. There was an article in the Star with one black person saying that Black Lives Matter should have condoned her tweets. I just wish I found the article. That, you know, they should have condoned the black female's tweets and blah, blah, blah. But there was more media support for her from the one black, because we only have two black journalists in Toronto, just to give you context. So it's a bit different from the U.S. Desmond Cole, one of our top journalists, he made an excellent defense. And one of the refined white supremacists who were interviewing him about the issue, he tried to say, well, you know, Desmond, I don't see you as those black. I always tell people you're not part of Black Lives Matter, that, you know, we've talked about this. And he said, no, I agree with her tweet. This is a lot what a lot of black people think. And he sort of just walked over that and just completely cut that off. But that's exactly what they tried to do. And on her, she had a Facebook, she had to change her Facebook, and she had to, I don't know if she deleted her fan page, because she also does some other stuff. She has a fan page. And there were a lot of whites, actually from America, a lot of them, whites from America, started commenting on posts that were a year or two old, because I guess they found out about her, started saying she's starting to use all sorts of racist, misogynistic slurs on her page, all over her page. It like blew up. Which is very interesting.
Fascinating. Yeah, that standard operating procedure. That's one of those where I think it's so important to really try to get in the habit where we're not, even if you disagree, it's not saying you have to agree with everything that any non-white person, any black person says about racism, but just being very mindful that racists love it when they can go get you for a quote or something where, oh, don't you disagree with what this black person said? Isn't it crazy what this black person said? Particularly if they're talking about racism, white supremacy, that they really love to do that and just to make every effort. They say, even if you don't agree, they said what they said. He said what he said. And keep it moving. And that sounds awesome. The report that you said about Desmond Cole, this black journalist, who said, actually, I agree. And I understand the logic of why she said that. And a lot of black people feel that way. That's even better when you have that sort of thing. But I also did see that a lot of the black people and the folks that have been protesting with Black Lives Matter, or even just if they're black people and they are also concerned about and subject to racism, were supportive of what she said. That is fantastic. Unless folks had other commentary, they wanted to make sure they got in on that. I was going to ask about the BBC program Undercover, because it's the same thing, basically police terrorism. It's just instead of Canada, it's in the UK. I think Lorraine, you had messaged me about this TV program. I don't know if folks everywhere else have seen this or aware of this. Undercover, it's it just started. I think it's only a 6-episode series, so this is not some lengthy thing that's going to be on for years and years. They've only had 2 episodes, so I think the third episode might be on today or sometime in the next 24 hours. But it's this mini series. It's focused on a black family. They have the lawyer. It's the black female actress. She was in Hotel Rwanda. If you give me a second, I'll get her name. But she was in Hotel Rwanda. She was in After Earth. She was in the film Skin about racism in South Africa. She's been in a lot of different projects, films. I'm sure.
Sophie Okonodo.
That's her name. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the one.
White mover as well.
Yeah, exactly. And she had a child with a white man, unfortunately. She is a attorney, and it's like explicitly about racism. She's an attorney. She's working on a death row case in the States. She comes to the States, Louisiana, no less. And then she's also working against racism in the UK, and it follows her family. It's more background to it, but I'll stop there. With anything that you you sought in terms of why you thought I should try to check out this show, Lorraine?
Well, basically, in the UK, you never see a black family in the media, ever. You know, if you're fortunate, you may see a black man with a white woman. You may see a black woman with a white man. Perhaps if you're fortunate, you might find a dual heritage family with white-looking children. But for she is a dual heritage woman, I assume, with a black man. The children are black, you know. So that's what caught my attention in the first place. Now, I think it was in 2008, there were some police officers in the UK that had been found guilty for starting up relationships with people whilst they were undercover. So, from what I understand, this show is sort of to highlight what was happening then. But yet, they choose a black man in a black relationship around a time where people are starting to move forward here in the UK. There's a radio show called Galaxy. They've started a reparation movement, and they march once a year on the 1st of August in London. The media never covers it. The numbers are growing every year. They've tried all kinds of things to block it. They've even put on like a fun day on that particular day to distract people from going. But as the radio show is picking up, more and more people are becoming aware. And one of the things that comes out every now and then is, what about the people in the community who were undercover? The ones that you think are there to fight the cause, but they're not really there. This sort of show puts doubt, you know, in people. It also puts doubt in the fact that a woman who is aspiring to be a barrister, in fact, I think she's aspiring to be a director of public prosecution. She cannot rely on her black man. You know, the only way you can have a successful career is if you've got a white man, and I can guarantee he's going to have a white woman somewhere in this show. And quite possibly she may well do. Don't know. We'll wait and see. But it definitely puts that doubt, where you've even got a strong looking black couple with a black family, and that there's something underlying behind it, that there's that mistrust. That's what my observation is from the show anyway. I don't know if anyone else has watched it and what they think.
Yeah, I've watched it as well.
I've not seen it. This is the first time I'm actually hearing about it. But from what I've just heard, they always do something like standard procedures. There's always got to be some kind of dysfunction there. So if you do see a black family, you know, you could, it is guaranteed you're going to see dysfunction. But over here, the premise is, if you do see a family, it's always, if there is a black person or black man, that black man never has a black wife. He always has, standard procedure, a white wife, or sometimes if they don't go white, they might go Asian, like in Luther. I think in Luther, his wife was Asian. But over here, the standard procedure is, if you see a black man, he has a white woman.
Lorraine?
Yeah?
Don't you think it's funny that in Undercover, the whole thing is that this woman is on a quest for the truth when she's got lies underneath her own nose in her house, and it's like this guy is still undercover as a sleeper cell and they're about to reawaken him.
Well, absolutely. Anybody who's stepping forward to do anything in the community has to be aware that the one that's right under your nose, the black person that's supposed to be there to support you, is the one that you need to be watching, not the European that's out there basically practicing racism and white supremacy. You know?
Just for folks who haven't seen the show, what they're talking about, like the family that they show, right? The black male, he's a police officer, undercover police officer. And they set up in, I think it's the second episode, they show him doing this undercover drug sting, and his eventual wife, they aren't married at the time, the black female character, Sophie, I forgot her name, she goes into the case and is like, we've got all these undercover agents here, and they won't even release which ones are the undercover agents, and she wins the case. She gets the drug dealers off, and the black male is furious. And so because of this, they say, well, hey, we will send you undercover and pair you up with her so that we can spy on her and get more information about what she's doing with her different cases. And
you see, sorry, go.
That's the new aspect, because this doesn't make sense.
Let's see.
Can I add something to that, Gus?
Just, I was going to add one more comment.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No apologies needed. But they give him a new assignment, basically, and they tell him that you're moving up. We're taking you off the drug thing. We're going to use you to infiltrate and spy on this black female attorney to get more information about what she's doing so we can, you know, better neutralize her. And so this is 1996, and they have these community meetings where black people, they're trying to deal with racism, and they're trying to deal with racism globally. Like, that's the thing that was astounding to me. Like, they're talking about racism and saying, hey, what happens in the States or anywhere in the world to a black person affects black people right here, all of us, and we should be concerned about it and trying to do something and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, wow, that is unusual to hear, you know, that to particularly have a mainstream television program where racism is being talked about in a global sense and we should be concerned about racism anywhere on the planet. So they have these meetings. She's at the black female attorney. She's at this meeting. She's supporting, like, yeah, we need to do this. So he's there as an agent to spy on her, to get close to her and all that. I'm going to play a quick sound clip to give people an idea of what happens, because this is a part of her eventual husband. This is a part of his shenanigans to, like, convince her that, hey, he's down for the cause, I'm in it, this is how he gets closer to her. So they're at a meeting where they're questioning the police. So this is her eventual husband. He's still a police officer, but he's questioning two police officers. It's one black officer and one white officer, and he's asking them questions. This is what you're going to hear. This is from the show Undercover.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Any other questions?
Sir?
What kind of car have you got? BMW. How many times have you been stopped and searched?
I'm a police officer.
Yeah, but what's the answer to my question?
Seven times this year.
Excuse me, officer. What about you?
I haven't been stopped.
What? This year?
Ever.
Have there ever been reasonable grounds for stopping you?
No.
Have you ever been arrested as a result of being stopped?
No.
So are you a drug dealer?
No.
Did you steal your BMW?
Yes, very
fine. Then how the hell can you afford to pay for a car like that, nigger?
Okay, okay. Okay, good joke.
Oh, what? So it's funny? There's something funny about this. What kind of a joke is it?
Look.
Listen. I don't know how you can live with yourself, mate. I want to hear you admit it right here, right now. Tell us that the Metropolitan Police Force is racist. Go on, can you do that?
Come on.
Because if you can do that, then maybe we can all start something. Fun.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So they end the meeting at that point. But the person asking the question, that is the black male who is an undercover officer. So he's doing all of this to, you know, try to really fool and convince everybody. So they think he's this really right on activist for questioning the police like that. Andrew, you were going to comment?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've not watched it. I read about it, the undercover program, a few days ago. And I was just interested because on one level, As was said, I think, by Lorraine, the last time we had a black family on TV was a show called Desmond's, right? Which they still show, repeats on. I think that program's great for a lot of reasons. I know that Desmond, he's dead now, by the way, but he came in. Well, he was on the Cosby Show years ago, about probably I don't know, when the Cosby Show was on. He was a guest. On that program, so you would have seen his face before. His name's Norman Beaton. Anyway, as regards this program, it's interesting on a lot of different levels. First of all, I just would like to. I'm going to find who program because I know that Adrian listens to an Asian woman. I know that she's a screenwriter. I know that they. I read a while ago that they had collaborated on something, and it was going to come out. And I don't know if it was a theatre production, whether or not it was this. That's one thing. And it's good that you played that clip because there's this whole thing, and there's been this whole thing amongst the so-called conscious community in this country, particularly in London, about supposed spies that were in amongst us. Blah, 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 and all the rest of it. I mean, obviously, this, you know, that should be of no surprise to anybody at all. But, you know, so all of those things are quite normal. But so I was actually wondering about, because obviously some things slip through the net. Sometimes the BBC lets things on TV by accident, but that's very rare. I think most of it, you know, the BBC is a government agency, right? So, and it's a propaganda agency. So therefore, I was wondering, why would they let this kind of thing on TV? I don't think they're trying to do the black community any favours by having a positive black family on TV. So that one goes out the window, right? Okay, so they're showing a mirror image of the so-called conscious community, like a community meeting, right? And obviously he's a spy, right? So the only purpose I can see for them letting that kind of thing on TV is to engender mistrust amongst the so-called conscious community. In other words, anybody amongst us could be a spy, similar to the Black Panthers. You don't know who's a spy. You've got to watch everybody. You can't trust nobody, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just to sow mistrust. No doubt, though, obviously those characters do exist. I mean, if I was a white racist, I'd pay a whole heap of black people to go and infiltrate and just give them a whole heap of money. That's what I would do. So no doubt, well, we know they do it. But nonetheless, for black people to take this on board and to really sort of have it in our psyche, going to trying to do community organisation, trying to do that in future, knowing, thinking, worrying that the person that you're working with may or may not be this Adrian Lister character in this TV programme, I'm wondering what kind of an effect that may or may not have. That's what I'm wondering.
Mary, were you going to comment on this as well?
I was just going to say, in response to what Andrew just said, that I think that they are showing this positive image so that they can ultimately destroy it, because obviously this woman's going to find out that her husband is not what he appears to be, so it's just going to be a whole load of destruction. So I think it's just for that purpose, just to show something that's meant to be positive, a nuclear family with a professional woman and a doting father just going to be destroyed. So that's what I think.
Absolutely. And they have three children in this program as well. They've been together. I think they've been married for 20 years or so. They've been together for 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Even the wild thing is, it seems like they have not been using him to spy on her and gather intel for a number of years. It seems like this is, and all of a sudden they come back into his life when she's going to get this promotion to be the public prosecutor. And it's like, uh-oh, she's getting a new job. We need you to, go back to work and be spying on her. Get, you know, whatever details she tells you about her cases. When she comes home, give us that information after a long period, I guess, of inactivity, which I thought was interesting that racists demonstrating that sort of power. That's at least what was conveyed to me, that sort of power that at any moment we could come in and disrupt a happy, stable family that's been together for decades. We can come and disrupt this in a matter of minutes and throw the whole thing asunder. That, you know, you've been lying to her, that this, the whole foundation of this is just lies. So, you know, however you want to do things, you act like you don't want to do it, fine. We'll just come tell her what you've been doing and see how all that plays out, how your children think about you after they find out you've been lying and spying on them for all this. Or you can just go play along, spy on her, give us the information that we want and continue, you know, with your little household. I also thought it was interesting that the black male, his father dies early in the series, and he doesn't even go to see his dying father. Like, they call him to say, you know, hey, your dad is about to die, you should be here, and he totally ignores it. He doesn't go to see him, like, at all. The other thing I thought, which you all already brought up, but I thought it was significant because this came out, like, even more recently. I think the caller said in 2008 that it came out that they were doing this, that the racist white supremacists, the Metropolitan Police Department, that they had officers who were spying on citizens and trying to get information. This came out with the Stephen Lawrence case, like big time in 2012, because they were saying, oh, yeah, instead of going to get the racist thugs that killed Stephen Lawrence, this 17-year-old black teenager in 1993, instead of going to get his killers, they were spying on the Lawrence family. To see what his mom, Doreen Lawrence, and his dad and any other supporters, to see what they were doing. And, you know, do they have any dirt that we could use against them so that people don't feel sorry for them about this tragedy and people won't support them to try to get justice for their murdered child, that they were spying on them? And within all that, oh, yeah, we also had enforcement officers who were lying, going and a part of their duty, going and having sexual intercourse with different people so that they could further spy and neutralize them, even having children with them. And some of these officers, apparently they were married and had their own families while they were doing this. They had a documentary that came out in 2012. I think, I don't know if it was on the BBC or if it was on Channel 4, but it was on one of the main British UK television programs where all of this came out. I thought it was fascinating, not that they couldn't do this with black people, but at that time when I saw this information, it was white officers that they were highlighting that were engaged in this behavior. I also think it's really, really significant that they put this out in a drama format, but they have a black person as the face of the Fink, the spy, who's engaged in this, you know, really, really deceitful sexual behavior just to get information and ends up having a family and a marriage out of all of this. But it's all based on lies in support of the police department and their scandalous, corrupt behavior. I thought that was really, I think that's another standard operating procedure, to put any sort of misbehavior, to put a black face on it, even when it's documented, well documented, that this is something that whites have been doing.
And the way they present the male character in the show as well, he's a very passive homemaker. You know, I think he's a writer, if I remember right, but she's the go-getter. She's the one who's fighting. She, you know, she has no reason to doubt him. She has no reason to question who he is, whether he's genuine, you know, towards the family or anything, you know. So it really just, it's a setup. It's a setup, basically. Really is a setup.
Absolutely. Any other comments folks want to get in? Like I said, I think the third installment, I think it's either coming out today or tomorrow, and it's only 6 episodes. I did see that. This is a miniseries. It's not something that's going to be on for, you know, the next 6 years or anything. Any other comments folks want to get in on this?
Yeah, I've just got one other comment, really. I'm hoping, I suppose, because it's white people that's paid for it, I'm hoping that black people don't watch it, I suppose, because whatever comes out of it, it's not going to be anything good. So I'm just hoping black people don't. I'm hoping black people are. I mean, I don't know about this one, but I'm hoping black people are no longer looking or expecting any positive of themselves on white TV or white media. I'm hoping that black people, non-white people, are just rationing everything they watch and their children watch on white TV, on white media, because there's nothing good there at all. There's very little good there, you know. So, I think black parents need to audition what there is and what they watch, what I personally take in and what we, our young people take in. People are paying for these programs. That's just all I want to add, really.
Dr. Welsing, I think she would encourage reading is more important than watching television. Generally, you're just not going to find. And there may be an exception. I can't think of one at the moment. But generally, anything that they put, particularly if it's on a mainstream program anywhere in the world, it's probably going to be something very much in support of white supremacy and just offering different degrees of degradation, degrading images of black people, black inferiority, nothing that's going to help us get correct thinking towards solving this problem. Again, if folks, because we only have about 30 minutes left in the program, so if folks have other issues that they want to make sure that they get in, or if folks, listeners, have questions that they want to ask, the number again, 641-715-3640. Folks have questions they want to ask, or other topics that they want to make sure they get in.
So go on, Mr. Fox.
So I'm just agreeing on what you said regarding the television, because I think is it Dr. Kamal Kamban, he said it the best, that, you know, the first to the mind is the winner. And with our children, we're constantly, as children growing up in front of that TV, and all the negative images, the anti-blackness, that you only get to realise, if you're lucky, when you get older, how detrimental it was to be in front of that TV at an early age.
For sure. Caller in Canada, were you going to comment as well? Then we'll get Andrew.
No, I had no comment.
Oh, okay. Andrew, you were going to say something?
Yeah, just one thing I'd just like to say, I suppose. Whatever this program shows, I think I think one of the things non-white people, one of the things African people, black people adults need to focus on really is mutual self-respect in black African relationships, and how we generate that in our relationships, whether they're friendships, how we treat each other, in marriage or in trying to form relationships and all that, because we have to generate stable relationships for ourselves and for our children, and anything that causes mistrust between African men and women, like this program does, right? Is you know, we need to deal with it and knock it on the head, meaning that we have to quash it. End it, you know what I mean, so that we can have lifelong committed relationships, you know, and this program is meant to not, I mean, obviously you don't know what's going to happen in the last series, you know, they might do something really positive, but who knows, you know, I wouldn't hold my breath. So in the real world, you know, we need to make sure that our relationships are as focused and as good as what we can make them.
One thing I wanted to, or I guess two things, I was going to ask just general coverage, what people have been seeing about the earthquake in Japan as well, just to see what the international coverage or perspective on that is. But before I ask about that, we have been talking a lot, or it's been talked about a lot, even beyond us, about in the States and in other parts of the world, legalizing various drugs, whether it's all drugs or cannabis specifically. That's been gaining a lot of attention. We had John Patash on the program again last week, and his latest book, Drugs as a Weapon Against Us, talks about the long history of white supremacists using all forms of drugs and alcohol to maintain and strengthen their domination over black people in particular, non-white people in total. Is this something that's playing out in your different parts of the world as well, this commentary on drug legalization, if it's cannabis specifically or different types of drugs?
Can I say something about that? A few years ago, this will blow your mind. A few years ago, when when there was a mayoral election going on and they were campaigning for that, there's a gay man who used to be the head of the police whose name escapes me now, but his name will come back. And he was running against Ken Livingstone. At the time, I can't remember what, but he was a head of police in South London, and part of his patch was Brixton. His name will come back because I'm not going to leave this program until I can remember what his name was. He was on a Sunday night show. He's on Dotton Adebayo's show, which is, for those that don't know, he's a black news presenter in London. His show starts on a Sunday at 8 o'clock, so today. And he was doing a radio show phoning, and so you could ring in and ask him questions, right? So when that man was the head of the police in South London, in Lambeth, in Brixton, right, what that man did, he stopped the arresting of all drug dealers in the Brixton area. Right. So in the Brixton area, if you were a drug dealer, you could go down there and happily sell drugs openly and not be arrested by the police. Right. Now, that was a known thing. Everybody knew it. So you could just imagine what happened in Brixton at that time. This was probably about, this would be about 12, 13 years ago now, around about 10 years ago now. Now, I remember coming, you got a Tesco there. Tesco is like a shopping where you go to buy groceries. I stood there. There were two policemen standing there. So I came out and I asked the policemen, do you know there's people selling drugs about 200 yards down the road in broad daylight? Do you know that? And the police said yes. And I said, well, if you could get a promotion, go down there and arrest them. And they just laughed. They said, it's not going to happen. And I said, why are you not going to arrest them? And they said, well, more were just going to show up. And I said, well, just arrest them. Just keep arresting them. Right. And so they just said, well, no, we don't do that anymore. So a few weeks later, this man that I'm talking about running for a mayor was on this gay man running for mayor was on the Sunday show. Right. So I asked him a question. Right. Remember, that's a black show. Right. So I rang up and I said to him, if I vote for you, do you promise not to? Because prior to that, we all knew that it was a drugs experiment he was running, meaning that in that area, right, the known experiment was, right, not to arrest anybody in that area, right? So I rang up and I asked him, if I vote for you, do you promise not to to arrest and not to have any more drugs experiments going on where black people live, work, and play? Can you promise that? Do you promise not to let any drug dealers sell drugs where black children walk to go to school, to and from school? Because, you've got Elm Green School just around the corner from Colarber Lane, right? Colarber Lane's in Brixton, runs right through Brixton. And this white gay man, whose name was Skets, I'm going to Google him now. This white gay man said, no, he can't promise that. So he's on a black station, right, a black program anyway, and this man he gets asked a straight question about arresting drug dealers to make where I grew up a safe area for my young nephews and nieces and granddad and grandmother, and this white man couldn't promise that he weren't going to do another drugs experiment, right? So that's one thing. The other thing I want to say is that for me, taking any form of drugs and African liberation ending white supremacy, but for me, the two don't mix. Right? So that's the last thing I want to say.
Oh, I'm getting a little bit of... I'm picking up some background noise. I'm not sure which line it's from. Again, if you could use your mute button if you know you're in a noisy environment, just to knock out some of the... Okay, looks like that was Lorraine's line. I'm going to add her back. Just give a second to see if we can clear out some of the distortion in the background. I definitely agree. I know Dr. Welsing would support that completely. The report that I published, or I didn't publish, but I posted it on Facebook earlier today, and it's just been a barrage of reports in the States. That's why I'm curious to see what you all are seeing from your spot on the planet. But they had a report in the New York Times that was published yesterday online. It'll probably be in the main paper today, but it said how getting high made me a better caretaker. And it didn't have a photograph, but I suspect that this is a white man, and he's talking about his wife, how she has, I believe it was Parkinson's, and he has to take, he's 75, they're older, and he says that he's been using marijuana for decades, and he just talks about how great it is, and how he goes out now, and he takes his morning stroll to get his exercise, and, you know, he's under the influence, and it makes his walk more interesting, and he's more curious about everything, things that he would normally take for granted. Now he finds them really, really interesting and fascinating, and it just, you know, really enlivens his spirit and his senses, and how he uses throughout the day. So whenever he's feeling that he needs a little energy boost, or he's feeling a little down, or maybe he's just taxed with having to take care of his partner who can't really do a lot, he has to like do the cooking and take care of her and everything, take care of the house and everything, that he'll go and use a little cannabis, and then he feels great. He's ready to go get back to work, cooking, cleaning, whatever he has to do. And it's just been a barrage. It's been a barrage of these type of reports over the past, I would say it's not just this week, it's been a long run of these where different people talk about it, makes them a better parent. Some of them will be white, or a lot of them have been white people. Makes them a better parent, makes them a better teacher. They had a report this week how LSD helps you connect with the universe. And this is on NPR. These are not, you know, nutty crackpot websites that people would say, oh, that has no credibility, no validity. That's just, you know, somebody talking nonsense. This is sites that people generally would say, oh, these people, this is a credible news source. For people in the States, NPR, the New York Times, Washington Post, they had an article at the beginning of the month how LSD is good, acid is good for you, and it'll make your mind operate better. It'll make you happier. It's just been a barrage of this. And I just, in my view, under a system of racism, white supremacy, I take it as total chemical, biological warfare, that whites have deliberately waged war on black people and locked up tons of black people worldwide for all kinds of drug offenses, drug possession, suspicion of drug, even if you're not selling or using or under the influence, but just being a black person, we just assume that you're associated with drugs, so that's grounds for us to stop you and harass you and deny you jobs and employment and education and everything else constructive. Now, hey, we should just have everything legal. Drugs is great. We were wrong, and a lot of it has been, this is against racism. We acknowledge this whole quote-unquote war on drugs. It's just been racist, and we're sorry. And what we'll do to make amends for it, we'll legalize all drugs. Now we'll make them all available, and we'll have dispensaries. We'll regulate it so we can get taxes from this, and we can use this money for schools and all these other types of things. They have a really great spin on it, but I just don't see how this is going to be effective, particularly if you, under these conditions, have a lot of non-white people who are not thinking clearly to make the best possible decisions while whites are waging war on us in all areas of people activity and in the most sophisticated manner possible. I just don't see how this is going to work out to our best interest. But anybody else have, I know we heard Andrew's thoughts on this. Anybody else have you, is this a global thing, the legalization, or anybody else have thoughts or observations on this?
It hasn't come to this side yet, but I'm sure that they're going to find a way to make the law more lenient. In fact, a couple of years ago, they upgraded cannabis to a Class B offence from a Class C. In Class C, there's less legal penalty
for being in possession and for using it. So they upgraded it, but I'm sure that they will follow suit with whatever America does and find a way to monetize it. And we all know who's going to make the profit off it.
Absolutely. Played a segment yesterday where they've talked about how this is big. They had an article also in the New York Times this week talking about how big, and President Obama and many others said that this was exactly what was going to happen when they continue with the legalization. I think it's just a matter of time before it becomes legal at the federal level here in the states. They have different states. I think it's 5 areas now and more to come because it's going to be on the ballot this year. California and some other states are going to vote on it. But federal laws, I think, will change eventually. It'll just be a matter of time. But they said that they think it'll just be big businesses like with tobacco, Philip Morris and different companies, that they'll just switch now that, you know, cigarettes are no longer in vogue and they've had their campaign against cigarettes for a long time, that those companies will just switch. And now they'll just do cannabis and sell that instead of tobacco, or maybe in addition to tobacco and the other cigarette products. But they said in California that they're buying up land for mass cultivation, that's happening, and this is huge business. And exactly as Mary just stated, they have done a fantastic job of excluding Black people from this astronomical market. I think the report I just played yesterday on the compensatory call-in, they said that 1% of the shops that sell this product are owned by Black people. 1% out of, I think it was 3,600 shops. I think they've got like a handful, maybe a dozen or so, are owned by Black people. The caller from a block number, did you have a comment, question you wanted to get in as well? The caller from a block number, did you have a comment or question you wanted to get in as well? Maybe they're just listening. I thought they had a hand up that they wanted to get a comment in. Last 15, I had said one other question I wanted to make sure I got in. Anybody else have comments, questions they wanted to get in?
I just want to say that I found that guy, that police, I found his name. His name's Commander Brian Paddock. And the history of that gay man in Brixton and what he did is well worth a read, basically. And respect, in respect of drugs, arresting people with it and drug dealers, you know, it's just amazing. And the fact that this guy said he's happy to have another drug experiment. And also what they're gentrifying. You know, so the whole thing, if anyone's got time, is worth reading the web. Just to, you know, and the fact of the whole thing about arresting or not arresting drug dealers, where Black people live, work, rest and play. You know, serious thing.
Your line broke up a little bit. What's the officer's name again?
Oh, sorry. His name's Brian Paddock.
Brian
Paddock. Yeah, P-A-D-D-I-C-K. His history, that man is... what I've noticed about certain people, right, white people, they make a career, right, sort of floating around Black people and Black, like whether it's schools where Black children are the majority or Black areas, right? And this guy, if you read his CV, it's on the internet, you will see that he's made a career from floating around where Black people live. That's what he's done, you know, and a lot of these people do stuff like that.
I know lots of people in the States can attest to that pattern that you observed. When it is convenient for what the racists plan, what they have planned for a particular area, for a particular segment of non-white population, Black people in particular, sometimes they arrest the drug dealers, sometimes they don't. Depends on what it is that they have planned for that particular area of the world. I know a lot of folks can attest to that sort of pattern here in the mm-hmm. States, depending on what they want to do with that particular area. Other folks that dialed in, the caller from a block number, if you had a question or a comment, I went to your line, but it seems like you might be, maybe you're just listening, that's fine too. But we do have only about 15 minutes left, so you should go ahead and speak up if you did have a comment or question that you wanted to make sure you got in. How, I guess, the coverage of the earthquake or earthquakes, I guess I should say plural, in Japan. Has anybody noted anything of significance in how that's been discussed, talked about in your part of the world?
It's been spoken about quite a bit, along with the other one that happened in, is it Peru? Or is it Panama? There's been another one that's happened in Central America. Did you hear about that one, Gus?
I saw the report yesterday. I just don't remember the specific location where the other one was.
I think it's Peru, but they have covered it a bit this weekend. Yeah, they've covered it a little bit, so I think everyone's kind of aware of what's going on.
I remember when they had the earthquake, I believe it was 2011. I think it was 2011. I might be in error about that, but I think it was 2011 when they had the big earthquake in Japan, or the tsunami, excuse me, when they had the tsunami. They kept making these comparisons to Hurricane Katrina and the conduct of black people in Louisiana, and saying, you don't see anybody in Japan looting and raping babies. They're just trying to help people, and they're still being civilized and constructive. I remember that stark. I believe this was 2011 when they made that comparison, and leaving out all of the terrorism, white terrorism, that was directed against black people during Hurricane Katrina. But I starkly remember that. Any other observations on that or other things folks want to make sure they get in the last 10 minutes or so of the broadcast?
They actually said that on national news.
Oh yeah, this I don't remember if this was something that was on like ABC or 60 Minutes or a broadcast like that, but there were several comments made in articles and things of that nature where people made that comparison. I remember we talked about it on the program back when it happened. I'm just making sure it was the 2011 tsunami that went down. But I remember they had like pictures, and people were just, you know, saying, hey, you don't see black people. I'm going to see if I can find some of the articles, and I'll post them on the Facebook page. But yeah, I remember talking about this and them saying that explicitly, like, you don't see them acting the way that black people did during Hurricane Katrina.
What the hell's wrong with these people?
Racism, white supremacy.
I know, but my God, people were dying in Hurricane Katrina. Like, what the hell's wrong with you?
I'm going to dial Lorraine back in. Some sort of distortion on her line. I don't know what it is. And it turns out I was in error. This was on mainstream outlets. This was in 2011 when the tsunami hit. This is on NPR in Japan. Scenes of much destruction, little looting. And there are tons of articles. If you look online, there's Slate had an article that's pretty mainstream. But they had tons of these. One of these is on the Telegraph as well, telegraph.co.uk, where they have tons of these. Why so little looting in Japan? That there were many mainstream outlets that were covering this exactly. I remember this. I remember, like I said, we talked about it on the program. I remember it starkly because it was almost like, I remember listeners were saying that they were having to defend. They felt like they were having to defend black people because this was coming up in classes or, you know, serious forums where people, like I said, not some crackpot discussion, but serious forums where people were saying this, like, yeah, what's wrong with you black people? Japan, they're being civilized. They're not acting crazy. And they had this, you know, mass destruction over there, and they're just trying to help people. They're not raping babies. What's wrong with you all? Why couldn't you behave yourselves? Damn Louisiana. That was the exact tone back in 2011.
Well, they can all go to hell.
Someone really has a bad line.
I don't know if your volume is up too high or not, Lorraine, but it's coming from your line. If you can maybe turn your volume down, because we're picking up a lot of background noise.
Is that any better?
That is better. If you could turn, maybe it's the volume. If you could just turn it down, that would help.
Okay.
That is better. That is an improvement.
Wow. Okay.
But go, were you gonna comment or?
No, I was gonna say that with the hurricane in America, they wanted the land, didn't they? So when they were speaking badly of the people, it's because they were after something. There's nothing in Japan that they want. You know, so once they go in there and they start to take the land and, you know, they destroy the homes and whatever else, no one's going to have any sympathy for those people who rape babies, are they? You know, so.
This is the NPR report that they have on this is from back in 2011 in Japan. Scenes of much destruction, little looting. It reads, in the weeks following the tsunami, there have been relatively few documented reports of thievery in the devastated coastal cities of northern Japan. That's in contrast to widespread looting that has been reported in after natural disasters in other countries. To find out why, we visit the town of Kamishi, where the Black Tide killed 600 people. Threw an ocean freighter onto the wharf and blew open thousands of houses and shops, leaving many things to steal. There have been media reports of limited looting elsewhere, an ATM pried open, gas siphoned from disabled vehicles, stolen food, water, and beer. What about in this town? And they go on to give the reasons why this happened or why people behave so poorly in Katrina. But yeah, this was pretty widespread, I remember, at that time. And again, I don't remember any reports in 2011 or since of whites going to Japan with the expressed intent of killing non-white people, Japanese people, which did happen during Hurricane Katrina, where whites explicitly went to this area to kill and harm Black people, not Black people who were stealing anything, not Black people who were looting anything, just because they wanted to terrorize, pillage, and murder Black people. They went with that explicit intent. And this is well documented. You can check out the report, White Vigilante Violence, by one of our guests. He was on the program back in 2009. We had him on the program. He was on Democracy Now. He was in on PBS as well, but well documented. We had, he did the book Katrina After the Storm, Gary Rivlin, on the program as well, who had lots of great information about this, just direct terroristic violence against Black people during this time. Not help, not clean water, not food, not a ride out of the flooded area, but just terrorism and killing. I don't think that happened in Japan either. Right on. Anything else folks want to make sure they get in before we get ready to wrap things up? Any final comments?
If I may, sorry to talk about drugs again. I really do think it's we really have to be very careful about any support of any of drugs within our community or taking it or anything like that, because drugs and any kind of freedom from white supremacy, it just cannot happen because our minds won't be straight. And I can see how this is going to be pushed towards our young people as well, you know. And I think we have to be very, very mindful of anyone pushing drugs towards what message goes out to our young people in respect of it being okay to take any form of drug, because literally it'd be a drug to drug us and especially the generation to come to accept or do nothing or sit still or be horizontal against white supremacy. So I think we have to be very mindful about that and not be afraid to say that it is not conducive to ending the supremacy of Caucasians. Basically, that's a major message, really.
Yeah, I agree with that. People who have a set of people at war with them should not be taking drugs.
Agreed. Be interesting to see how this plays out globally, because I know there are other countries, some of them in South America, that have also been on the same wavelength of the legalization, whether it's cannabis specifically or other drugs as well. But some other areas of the world have been doing the same thing, basically. So it'll see if this becomes like a global trend of, you know, drugs aren't as bad as we thought. Let's legalize and regulate and that sort of thing and be more lenient about all of this. But absolutely, I think this is one of those, I think it's very important to make sure we're looking at like long term impact, what we think this is going to be like 20, 30, 50 years in the future. If racism, white supremacy still exists, how is this going to impact the next 2, 3, 5, 10 generations of black children having this environment of white supremacy and having an environment that, in my view, just saturated with all sorts of chemicals and poisons and narcotics? Is that going to be in their best interest? I don't think so. I could be in error.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, over here, I think they're going to just, over here in Toronto, Canada, it's generally, I think, mimetic of what's going on in the U.S. The only thing that was different in regards to drugs that I remember I saw about 3 weeks ago on the local news station here in Toronto is there was a white woman talking about how we have to make injection sites more safe. And she reiterated that, you know, there's all different types, you know, that all people rhetoric, no matter color, gender, blah, blah, that are being affected. So they wanted to do something about injection sites. And I'm also wondering how much this idea to legalize drugs is tied to the increased drug use among white people, like heroin addicts and such.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's well documented as well. That's been in a lot of mainstream publications as well, and saying that you're seeing a totally different response to drugs this time around, since it's been such a spike in the number of white heroin addicts and white prescription drug abusers and methamphetamines as well, that these are things that are almost exclusively white problems. And they're saying that if this was, you know, something where black people were doing this, that it would not be, oh, let's legalize and, you know, find all of this kindness and sympathy and let's get them some medical programs. We don't want to lock them up and have them in jail and ruin their life so that they can't, you know, get their career back together or get their academic career together. You know, we want to make sure that they get help so they can become progressive, productive citizens. That it would not sound like that at all. And pointing out the even, as I said, like the New York Times and many other mainstream outlets, they've pretty much said that explicitly. I think even they had a documentary on PBS earlier this year called Chasing Heroin. It was set here, right here in Washington State for the most part, but they talked about that exactly, that you've got all of these, a lot of young white children in the suburbs who are well-to-do, parents have great jobs and lots of money. They're the ones that are out here doing all this stuff with heroin and prescription pill abuse and what have you, that if they were black, totally different response.
Most definitely. It's friendly fire. Their own children are being hurt by their own weapons.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I would say, just it's been my observation, a lot of times things that start out as being a problem for whites or some sort of destructive habit that mostly white people are engaged in, just because of the system that we're in, a lot of time that stuff ends up leaking onto non-white people, where we end up with those same problems or engaging in the same destructive behaviors just because whites dominate. So I would definitely say to just be mindful. People are seeing that sort of thing. That's why, again, why I just, hey, sobriety would be best. I try to get that in as often as I can, but it would not surprise me at all if in a few years' time, if you did start to see an increase in the number of black people, non-white people, that are doing heroin and some of these other narcotics that are right now pretty much an exclusive white problem.
I think, is it crystal meth? That's the big one. That is the big drug for white people. Yeah, that is one of the major big ones for white people. So if you actually did see an increase of black people doing that, that would be very shocking.
For sure. And a lot of this stuff, too, has been popularized with the television program, because we talked about that before, too.
Breaking Bad, yeah.
Popularized there, and some of the other big shows that they've had on that have made, you know, a lot of these different narcotics really popular. They even started because of the popularity of Breaking Bad. They were selling, they had like child Lego sets of Breaking
Bad.
Yeah,
seen them. Yeah.
Where they had, are you kidding?
No, yeah. No, this is real. This is real. Where they had like the crystal, a Lego crystal meth factory thing that you could construct, and they had the little lab suits on that they, you know, when they were going to make the crystal meth. This is real. That they made back when the series was, I guess it was on from 2000, it was on for 5 years, so I guess from 2008 to 2013 that the show was on.
That is crazy.
Albuquerque made a lot of money from that. People coming to Albuquerque for visits and, big toys being made. I remember listening to it on one of the Cal's broadcasts. It was big money for them. Kids getting all involved, dressing up as Jesse Pinkman and, is it Walter White, is it?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, the dressing up, mustaches, the hats. They had two really great shows on that.
Absolutely. That was one of the biggest television programs of all times here in the state. And in fact, just the marketing to kids, they also had candy that they made because it was the crystal meth in this show was blue. That was the thing that was special about it. It was blue instead of white. And so they made crystal. I forgot the name, but they had like a special name for it, but it was blue crystal or blue meth or whatever it was called. But they started making candy that looked just like that and selling it. And I guess that became a big thing for a while, too, when the show was on back in, like I said, 2013, 2012. So just that shows the twisted mentality of making sure that this gets marketed and popularized with children.
That's insane.
Yeah, white people do love shows at Breaking Bad, Planet of the Apes. It's, as you stated, you can tell a lot about them and their choices of movies and film series that they like to watch.
Mm.
Absolutely. And they've resurrected Breaking Bad. Not that I'm encouraging people to watch, and I'm not surprised, but they had said that they were going to do this. They have, in a way, resurrected Breaking Bad. They have Better Call Saul on it. That's based on, it's like a spinoff. It's one of the characters from Breaking Bad, but it's kind of the prequel, if you will. You get to see how this came to be, which is the exact same thing. The drug selling is still there, and you know everything else that was a major element of the show is all there. So I would just say, and John Potash, he talked about this in his book last week, just using entertainment, music to make all of this very, very popular and cool and to make it seem kind of innocuous, that it's, you can still be high functioning. I've even seen where they were talking about Toronto's mayor, Rob Ford, who had smoked crack. This is a white guy who's dead now, but where he smoked crack. And they were saying, see, he's functional. You know, he wasn't, you know, wasted and in a trash bin somewhere. He was able to still be the mayor of a major city and do his job competently, even though, you know, he admitted to smoking crack. He, you know, wasn't an addicted abuser who couldn't, you know, maintain his role as a member of his family and that sort of thing. It's been a lot of that sort of rhetoric, which, you know, hey, I have not scientifically studied drugs, but I just don't see it. Just to me, does not make logical sense to promote that way of thinking in an environment of racism, white supremacy, to just have something that, in my view, clearly is going to hamper your ability to make the best decisions. That just seems logical to me. I just don't understand how promoting that sort of thing to victims of racism is going to help us.
Maybe it also doesn't. It also doesn't make sense because they were lying about that guy. He was insane. He was running up in the place on official time, doing madness in official meetings. So they lied about that. They're lying.
And they blamed it
during the Black Panther movement.
They blamed it on. Sorry.
Lorraine, I guess...
It's okay, carry on.
Okay, then we'll get Lorraine.
No, I was just going to say they pinned it on the Somali influence in Toronto, Rob Ford's crack use. They tried to blame Somali drug dealers, so blame Black people that use cars. That's actually what they did in the media at the time.
It's always Black people's fault. Lorraine, was that you? Were you going to comment?
Yeah, I was going to say that during the Black Panther movement, drugs was moved into the neighborhood to break down what the people were building up, and it worked perfectly. And during a period now where you've got people watching Hidden Colors and all kinds of stuff to open the eyes, and people are talking about moving forward, rebuilding, again, drugs again. Do you know what I mean? So this is done on purpose. This is basically just to stop the people from moving forward, become, you know, aware and more active and move forward. You know, so
totally agree. And again, John Potash, he is a racist suspect. He's a white man, but he was on the program last week. He's been on the program twice, and both of his books that we discussed, The FBI's War Against Tupac Shakur and Black Leaders, and then the book we talked about last week, Drugs as a Weapon Against Us, both of them talk extensively about what you just said, Lorraine, them specifically deliberately using drugs to disrupt the Black Panther Party and just Black people that were working against racism in general. But he goes into a lot of information, a lot of detail about, I'm getting a lot of background noise, I guess, if you're shifting or moving around. But yeah, he talks a lot. He gives a lot of great detail about how drugs were used specifically to disrupt Black people when they were working against racism. The Black Panther Party, how this was used against Tupac Shakur's mother, Afeni Shakur, Huey P. Newton, other members, Black people that were in the 1960s and 70s, who were just trying to be clear and make great choices and even were taking explicit anti-drug stances and saying we don't want drugs to be a part of the Black Panther Party, and in fact we want to get Black people that are selling drugs and into drugs, get them to put that down and do constructive things, become political work against racism. How whites immediately went to neutralize that, not only because it was bad for the business of racism, but also it was costing them money. Whites make a lot of money off of the drug trade from a variety of angles, whether it's locking Black people up, or they're the ones that are producing these poisons in the first place, so getting us to sell them or use them, or just a variety of business interests for whites around the drug industry. I think that's one thing that we could do in terms of Black self-respect and Black economics. We're not going to spend a nickel on any of your drugs, narcotics, while the system of white supremacy exists. No money allocated to that at all. I think that would be a huge boost for us in solving this problem. With that, we did our 90 minutes, basically, a little over. Thoroughly enjoyed hearing from folks in different parts of the planet. I guess we'll be here again. It'll be next month, May. Get the exact dates. So it'd be May 22nd. Oh, nope. A little bit earlier. It'd actually be May 15th. May 15th is the third. It's the third Sunday of every month, if folks are keeping track. And we'll look forward to doing it again, seeing what's transpired between now and then. We should be here tomorrow, normal broadcast time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll have attempted Black parents on the program, folks who, as they've learned about racism, white supremacy, to see how that has altered the way that they just teach their children on the relationship that they have with their Black children, how things were when they were a little bit more confused about racism, and how things have changed as they have become, as they've gotten a better understanding of racism and how that's changed the relationship that they have with their children. Some things good, some things bad. It's certainly not all going to be fantastic, but it is a process, and I think it's good to kind of get some of those experiences, problems, things that have worked out well, and just to share, because I know we do have a good number of listeners who are parents and are looking forward to that information. So that should be tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It'll be in the archives if you can't listen live. And we should be here on Thursday. I think our caller in Toronto had said that there was a documentary filmmaker where she was talking about racism, white supremacy in Ontario and the history of Black people in that area. She should be with us on the program Thursday, this coming Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. She's sending me a copy of the film, so I've had a chance, hopefully by Thursday, to check it out one or two times, and it'll be good to hear from her. I think she says she's doing another film screen. She just did one within the past few weeks, and I think she said she's doing another film screening later. I think it's going to be the early part of May, so as soon as she should give out the date on the program, but when she gets it to me, I will share, because I know we have listeners in the Ontario area. I will share, so if you all want to go see the film and ask some questions and what have you, that would be grand. But she should be with us on Thursday. And in fact, I told her, she's just FYI, this is a non-white female. She has one white parent, one non-white parent, and that comes up in the film. But she said that some of the Black people that are in the film, I told her after we have the filmmakers on the program this Thursday, if we could get them back and maybe get some of the Black people that are in the film to talk, you know, directly about what their experience has been with racism. And she said she suspects that they would love that chance. So hopefully we can get it back on the program, and then maybe some of our listeners in Toronto, they'll have a chance to view the film and can share some thoughts. If folks have, I guess, questions, gripes, complaints, feel free. You can drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. Until justice at gmail www.thewellspoken.com, and we'll try to respond promptly. If you can't find something in the archives, or as I say, you have a guest suggestion, or just don't understand something, need clarity, feel free to drop an email and we will get back to you. With that, big thanks to all our listeners around the globe for taking some time out of your Sunday to speak with us. Enjoyed it. Always great, I think, just to be able to understand, comprehend racism, white supremacy, that racists are doing a lot of the same things worldwide in order to keep us under their rule. And I think just getting a better understanding of that, I think, helps us, goes a long way to being able to come up with some strategies for how we think about this problem, what can be done to neutralize racist man, racist woman, racist child. With that, I will say again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white terrorism. You do not want to be under the influence and have any enforcement officials anywhere in the world stop you and ask you questions under gunpoint, where you are not in your right mind, where you're under the influence and cannot make the best decisions to keep yourself safe, you and anybody that you might be responsible for. And even if it's not an enforcement official, sometimes even just a white person, period. Whites are dangerous. You really want to be lucid in dealing with them so that you can understand what's happening, what they're saying, and process, and again, just make the best possible decisions under conditions of white terrorism. Again, if you're going to be out and about in the vehicle, buckle up. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.